Tim Cruz, presentation for the content of this report. Then we go to item 3.1, presentation on the 2013-2014 annual report of Department of Defense Arms and Customs of Control. Over to you, Peter.
Thank you very much. I want to say good morning, members. In preparation for our engagement with the annual reports of the two departments and the two entities for the next 2 weeks, I drafted an overview of certain outcomes, priorities, and key issues that the committee can utilize going forward for the oversight and monitoring of the government and department's entities. This is basically the scope. First, I'll cover the Department of Defense, then military veterans, the Council Control Board, and then also. There are also word documents that give more detail to this presentation. There's one for the defense and one for the Department of Military Veterans, and then there's a combined one for the Council Control Board and also. So the narrative is in the word documents. So I'll just briefly summarize in this PowerPoint presentation what is in the word documents. If one looks at the first document that deals with an overview of the government outcomes, priorities, and allocations of the Department of Defense, one notes that one of the important things these days is the National Development Plan. And derived from that is the medium-term strategic framework, and there are various outcomes there that are being listed. And here, at this slide, we see that the Department of Defense, for instance, indicates to us what are some of the outcomes that they are going to contribute to. There, for instance, outcome 2, along with a healthy life for all South Africans, outcome 12, an efficient and effective development-oriented public service that empowers fair and inclusive citizenship. If one goes to the next slide, there's just a brief comparison between the 2 years, 2012-13 and 2013-14, and there we just see how the department actually performed with regards to those specific outcomes in the NDSF. For instance, there, with regards to outcome 2, there were 3 targets and 3 were achieved. Similar in 2013-14, 3 targets and then 3 were achieved. If one looks at the word document at the bottom of page 1, there are just some questions that I think one should maybe ask the department. For instance, how come the increase in targets in outcome 3, the increase in achievements in outcome 11, and why is there no mention made of outcome 12 in the latest annual report? So that deals with the government outcomes. Very important part is also the ministerial priorities. And as one can see there from page 2 at the bottom of the work document, there are various ministerial priorities that have been set. And this is a brief comparison from the year 2010-11 to 2014-15. Many of the subsequent priorities from 2011-12 have been mooted in 10-11, and later on actually manifested within the ministerial priorities. Very important issues there. For instance, the first one that has been problematic over these years, that is the enhancement of the language defense capabilities, maritime security, job creation, the advancement of our peacekeeping capability, the National Youth Service, the utilization of the reserves, the restructuring and support of the defense industry, and then the first defense works capability. Once again, there is a question with regards to that on page 4 of the word document. If one looks further, and this comes more from the accounting officer himself, and those are the strategic focus areas of the department, and I think these are very important because it relates to much of the oversight function or oversight activities that we're going to continue to do going forward. For instance, the defense review, military skills development system. There is a comment when you say that although it is viewed as a feeder system for the reserve and the regulars,
there was a reduced target of 4,208 in the last financial year. And previously, it was around 8,955. But when you look at what it actually achieved, it was 7,500. So those are the kind of things that we need to look at, because we all would have thought that we would sustain, you know, a high level around 10,000. I think there was the initial target, 10,000 NATS members in the service, you know, to feed the regulars and the reserve. So that is something that we need to look at. Another issue is also transformation within the SANCF, and then particularly with regards to representation of women in the command structures. The grievance procedures is just an example that I noted there. For instance, there were 139 grievances were resolved, while 644 remain unresolved. Also, the reconfiguration of force numbers, I think many of the members are aware that this is an issue that has been quite troublesome in the past for the defense force, and so it is. Also there, the second last one, corruption and fraud. The department says it continues with a zero tolerance attitude to all forms, but yet, if you look at the disciplinary aspect in the defense force, you can see there are indeed challenges there. The DOD audit as well, once again, we have a qualified audit, as the AD also indicated yesterday. And even though we have Operation Clean audit there, even though they established an internal audit division and busy capacitating it, there are still challenges, and that is something that we also need to concentrate on. There are just some of the additional strategic focus areas. I'm just going to refer to some. The third one, for instance, is the supply chain management. You know, there are indeed problems with that, and we need to look at it as well. Gender mainstreaming, the lack or the minimal representation of females in the top structures of the defense force. The last one, ethics and integrity, once again relating to good discipline, and that we need an ethical foundation to fight corruption and fraud in the defense force. If one looks at page 6 of the Word document, there is just a brief indication of the budget of the defense force in context of the criminal justice cluster. Here we can see that the police, for instance, has the budget for this year is about 72.5 billion. This is that of the defense force, 42.8, and then there's also this the correctional services, justice, and ITA. And then we can see then the different percentages of the budget in the cluster. For instance, the police for 8%, things 28%, and then the last one there is the IPED with plus minus 1% of the budget. So that's just to give a context to the budget of the defense force. Also there in the second last column, we can just note the number of members within the police, about 194,000 versus the 78,000 of the defense force, and up to 308 within the IPED. There is just a brief overview of the budget allocation between 2010, 11, 2014, 15 to the various programs. And then we can see the changes there. For instance, there, the change between percentage between 2010, 11, 2014, 15. There you can see the budget of the program administration that increased by 40.9% over that period. Force employment 41.7, land work 49%, air defense 30.5, maritime defense 56%, and the last one is general support 26.2%. And then we can also see the ranking next to that, that the biggest program in the defense budget is the land work program, followed by air defense, followed by general support. I think an important thing to note is going forward, what is the Defense Force's budget future spending going to look like? And I think one of the most important things is, at this stage, the defense review and what that has to say about future spending. The defense review alerted us to the fact that there's actually a critical natural state of decline within the change force. And that is because it's a view that the change force is actually underfunded, and that impacts on the state of readiness of the change force. And they say there that over the next 5 years, we will go to our strategic planning session, and then we're going to discuss this, are we going to monitor this? But over the next 5 years, the focus of the change force will be on arresting the decline in critical capabilities through immediate and directed interventions. And the minister said how we're going to deal with this is in the budget speech. He said that they will create a full-time capacity to develop a methodology for implementation of the change after that has been finalized by that parliament. And I think we need to engage with the department on this, because this is still very high level, and we need to sort of have an implementation plan, timelines, implementation agency, etc. Just briefly, here we can see the strategic areas over the next 5 years. And I said this is fairly high level, and I think we need to flesh out from the department exactly how we're going to come to deal with this. First one deals there with strategic leadership and succession planning. The next one deals with funding mechanism. Third one deals there with the renewal of defense personnel. I think we all agree that if one looks at the ratio of 40-30-30, there is now 40% for HR, 30% for capital expenditure, and 30% for operational expenditure. And if we look at the defense force, and I think Valialam will refer that to later, the budget for personnel compensation of personnel is about 53%. So that's a bit skewed. And the thing that you say they need to address it, but obviously it's not going to be a once-off. It's going to be a process that's going to be incremental. And over time, we need to address this ratio so that we move in the direction of having a 40-30-30 ratio with regards to this. The next one just deals there with the renewal of the defense organization, which is greater efficiencies and effectiveness. Second last one is reviewing the defense capability, strategy, and various defense position. And then the last one deals there with defense industry, especially as it relates to arms corps and the mail. So what we need to do is to ask the department to come forward and tell us how are we going to implement this, because we need action plans. We need to have communication as to what we're going to do, when we're going to do it, how we're going to do it, and the budget for these things. Because to arrest this critical decline, as I said, it's going to really require a major effort. So we need to engage with them about their strategic plans in regards to this. The last section of this part of the presentation, based on what I said before, is basically key issues that have been identified for oversight and monitoring. And I think we will likely be in agreement that the finalization and implementation of the change review is crucial. It's something that we need to pay attention to. Border safeguarding, the number of sub-units that are actually required versus those available. So Alan will refer to that as well. Job creation, again, there, what will be the contribution of the defense industry, the military schemes development system, and the national youth service system. Again, the enhancement of the landward capability. We talk about prime mission equipment, Project Acer, that is now acquiring 238 infantry combat vehicles, and we know some of the challenges with regards to them. I think that is something that we should keep a tap on. The next one just deals with the audit qualification, and we have some information about that yesterday from the AG. Similarly, with unauthorized, fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure. And a major issue for many of us is the defense work formation. As we all aware, that the infrastructure of the defense force is not in a good condition, and DPW doesn't always come to the party, and with the establishment of this, we hope that we'll be able to arrest the decline of the condition of the infrastructure in the defense force. Compensation of employees, the ratio that I was referring to. The safe operational capability that deals with the extra 5 hours that's required, as well as the limited sea hours of the Navy. Project Byron, what's the progress there? And then also with regard afternoon mobility health support services. The mosquito casting on sand is very something that we need to keep check on, because there's an exit, actually a large exit of skilled personnel and professional health professionals from the mobility health services, and I think that is something that we need to keep check on. Transformation I refer to. And then there's also the issue of the scheduled defense account. That is something that has come up from national treasury's reports too, and I think we need to keep a tap on them that as well. And then many of the others just deal with some of the issues that I mentioned before, but a new one is this cost of training and deployment of the SNDF for the proposed African capacity for immediate response to crisis with Agric initiative. And I think we need to monitor as to what's going on there. The next part of my presentation will deal with the Department of Security Veterans. There's also a work document on that. And then on page one, I'm just referring to the National Development Plan and what did the DMV say they're going to contribute to in 2014, the various chapters and what they will do. Then more specifically over the MTSS, what they plan to do in 2009 and 2014, different outcomes and their contribution to that. And then with the latest MTSS, we noted that there are two additional outcomes. And that is outcome 13, a comprehensive, responsive, and sustainable social protection system. Outcome 14, a diverse and socially cohesive society with a common national identity. And I think we would all agree that the Department of Military Veterans can contribute to that. And I think we should monitor the contribution to these outcomes as well as we go forward. They are just some of the ministerial priorities. As we are aware, the department started off in 2010 when the budget was allocated to them for the establishment, and from then on 2012-16 we look at their strategic plan, and there you can note some of the ministerial priorities that have been noted by the department. I'm not going to go through all of them, but suffice to say that in this case we see some of the priorities there. The next year they disappear, and then next year after that they just reappear. So there's a fluctuation with regards to that, and I think we should maybe just engage with the department, you know, about these priorities, how do we determine it, how we could some of them, you know, are there, then they disappear the next year. I think very important is also DMV policies, and they noted that over the MTF period they will focus on the finalization of the following service delivery policies. As we all are aware, in terms of the Mobility Veteran Act, Section 5, there are various benefits, socio-economic benefits that should be accrued or should be given to the military veterans. And if you don't have these policies in place, then obviously you've got to have challenges, you know, in dispensing with these benefits. And there, for instance, one of the benefits was transport. And this policy has not been finalized. Similarly with the other policies, something that we need to follow up on a regular basis. If you just look at the budget of the DMV, you can see that in 2011-12, they've been given around 20 billion. The next year, that's increased to around 96 billion. That is the audit figure. I think the correct amount stated there was 101.5 billion, but that is the audit amount of 96.9 billion in 2012-13. That increased to 351 billion. 13-14, and then we can see how the budget actually increased between those last 2 years, and also in the last column, just referring to the percentage of the total budget of the various programs, where program 1 consists of around comprises 36%, the second program 44%, and the third program around 28%. The next one, similar to the next one, the previous one, but here is just the ranking, and then we also say showing there how the budget actually increased over the years 2013 and 2014 versus 2014-15. Program 1 changed the budget there 60.7, second one 37.56, third one around 106%. And indeed, this is a move in the right direction because, as we are aware, the two programs, program 2 and 3, that is actually the service delivery programs of the department. And we would like to see that budget is obviously more than the one in administration, basically managing the processes within the department. So it's good to see that there's a movement to increase it, but I don't think it's supposed to be able to look at the projected allocations. If one looks at the key issues, I think one of the important things is the strategic planning session that I had after the DG and the DDG returned from the suspension, and they said they're going to develop a turnaround strategy. But I think this is something that we need to follow up on, because I suspect that it's a good idea to find out what went wrong so that in future we can monitor some of these activities that are likely to go astray. The next one also deals with MOUs and SLAs. This is problematic because the department is not always the delivery agency for these benefits, and if these things are not in place, then obviously we're going to have challenges. Staffing challenges, as well as the following of critical posts, and it's something that has been worrying many of us, and that is the database. Database has not been finalized. The last time the Deputy Minister was here, he said they intend to finalize the database by the end of this year. And we hope they're going to do that, because if you don't have a complete or a finalized database, I think it's difficult to do planning, budgeting, etc. There's also a problem with the slow progress installation of the IT systems. And an important issue there is also contradicting personnel information. That is also on page 7 of the Word document. Also, the various meetings, the question is just, how is this actually being applied in practice, and how successful is it. Again, also, there's a problem with the provincial structures, the accommodation of recruiter staff. The next one just deals with the allocation of bursaries. I think this is a follow-up as to how that happened. Spending on items such as consultants, S&T, entertainment and catering, stationing and printing, I think that is something that we should monitor, because you noted that many of the expenses within the administration program relates to those issues. An issue that has been worrying to many of us as well is the communication and marketing strategy of the department, because military veterans are struggling to get hold of the department, are struggling to get hold of information from the department. There should be a question about the establishment of wellness centers, and also access to veteran support for military veterans. And then also important is the idea that the department should have an independent vote, and that was supposed to happen this year already. And obviously there have been problems, and we should ask the department as to what's going on there. Chair, I'm close to concluding. I'm not going to go in much detail with regards to the Castle Control Board and ASCO. What I would like to do, however, is just to note some issues that the committee may consider for oversight and monitoring. And I think one of the first things there is the impact of restorations, under the daily operations of the castle. The utilization of the 13.9 million surplus, and I think Calvin will also refer to that. Also plans to monitor the increase in revenue through aggressive marketing and increasing the number of visitors. Also time frame with regards to filling up our vacancies. And similar with the Department of Military Veterans, to monitor the expenditure with regards to S&T, entertainment, printing, and publications. Then also the second last one is about vagrancy and crime at the castle and what they are doing about it. The last one there, that slide, is just the status of one of the restaurants at the castle. Just the findings of the audit
to Armscor. That is the issue of the appointment of the CEO. This has been coming on since 2010. And then also Armscor's role in the implementation of the defense review. I think it's also monitor Armscor's regional strategy. Also the talent development program, you know, how many people are under courses, what is the dropout rate, what is the retention rate after they've been, you know, subjected to these programs. The filling of vacancies, especially in regards to black females, in line with the employment equity requirements. Then, a controversial issue over the years, the defense industrial participation agreements. How is that being monitored and how is that progressing? And also to monitor the costs with regards to international training. You know, the number of people using the opportunity, success rate, as well as the retention afterwards. The conclusion is just a reference to the Simon's Town dockyard. There are some challenges in regards to the funding. Also, we'd like to know about the findings of this in-depth study that was done in 2013, you know, to turn around the dockyard. Also, you know, the measures to address the human resource challenges. And then, you know, the impact of the delays with capacity of unsafe operation ability, you know, such as operation copper. And then also challenges with repairing frigates and submarines. And then lastly, just the reports of the AG, expenditure management, annual financial statements, as well as the user. Thank you, sir, for your presentation.
Thank you, sir. Are we going to have another presentation?
Three.
The next one is on analysis. How do we proceed to another member? Do we take all the presentations? Okay. Okay. Thank you. Next candidate.
Speaker focused on a more strategic level with these things. I'm going to be focusing specifically on the Department of Defense's annual report for 2013-14. The presentation up there, you would have received copies of those, and the presentation is merely a guide to this document that you received, which is titled The Summary and Analysis of the Department of Defense Annual Report. So I'll also make reference in the presentation to the page numbers in this document I mentioned. As Peter started off, he noted a number of strategic outcomes and outputs which were identified by the Department of Defense, and he had a similar table up in his presentation. As you'll see at the top, it says the DoD strategic output is aligned to the medium-term strategic framework priorities of the government. At the top right-hand corner there, you would note a little bubble which indicates page 2. That is merely to refer you to the text document. You will find this slide refers to page 2 on the text document. In terms of the priorities that was identified by the Department of Defense and aligned to the CSF priorities, there's a number that Peter highlighted that were achieved and not achieved. The majority were achieved, but I'd like to focus on the ones that were not achieved. And the first one, or two that is of concern specifically here. I want to go through all the things, I will really go to the things that are of major concern. And two issues in the red box is of major concern. The first one is that only 17 of the planned 25 number of incidents of corruption and fraud reported for detection were achieved. So there was an underachievement in that regard. And if you go to the, if you look at the annual report, it says that actually 37 cases of corruption were reported, but of the 37, only 25 were found to meet the criteria. So I think the committee might be interested in asking the department to explain how they got from 37 that was reported to 25 that was actually investigated and only 17 achieved. I think there's some questions there. Second issue, the second priority that was not achieved that is of concern is the serviceability of equipment for external operations. This was, came in at 77% and I think the target was 100%. This is of serious concern given the forces that are actually deployed outside the country and where there's a need for them to have 100% serviceable equipment to fulfill their tasks while deployed in the DRC and Sudan and so forth. On page 3 of the long document, and then on the next slide, the Minister of Defence also identified 8 strategic priorities, which we refer to as well. Of these 8, there are 3 that I would like to highlight, which the committee might ask further questions on to the department. The first priority was the enhancement of the SANFC land for defence capability. The annual report stated that in 2013-14, a prime mission equipment and technology support plan was drafted. Now, the committee might be interested to ask more information on this support plan and, for example, whether Project Hoofacer was included in this plan and what the dates are for and implementation for this plan. Also, if this plan would be made available to Parliament for further scrutiny. Secondly, the revitalizing of reserves was another priority identified by the Minister. The issue here is that there is a slowdown in the recruitment of the reserves. That is also of concern because we've been seeing more and more deployment from the reserves, which is positive, but if there's a slowdown in recruitment, that is also a concern. Lastly, Peter referred to it as well, the defense work capability. Although it is functioning and it's a starting project, so it's slowly building up, there is still capacity constraints, and in the year under review, only 1,383 of the 2,517 funded posts were full. So this is a concern, especially in the early days of this project. These posts should be funded so that members may recall in previous years during oversight visits, we saw that there was problems with infrastructure, and this is the Defence Force answer to that. So it would be good if the committee can inquire into this. In addition to these priorities that was identified by the Minister, there's a number of additional main performance indicators that's indicated in the FDAF. I'll just want, like to highlight a few. I'm not going to go through everyone on the screen. But the first one there says compliance with SADC standby force. The target was 100%, but only 79% was achieved during the year under review. And that is of concern, and I think it links into the whole issue of the African capacity for immediate response to crisis. We should look at South Africa's capacity to contribute to these planned forces. The number 4 on the list refers to the number of reserves utilized per year. There's a bit of discrepancy between how the department reported it in previous years and currently. They said that the target to call up was to call up 24,243 reserves, but in actual fact they only called up 14,668, which they say they overachieved on, which is not the case, but they measured it in the number of call-up hours. So the committee might ask for some clarity on exactly how many reserves were called up during the year. The next two columns there refer to the number of forced employment hours flown and the numbers of sea hours per year. I will get to these later, but just to highlight them so long, they were both underachieved on in terms of flying hours and in terms of sea hours. The last one I would like to highlight on this graph here is the second last column there, which says the percentage compliance with self-sustainment of personnel. It's not exactly clear what this refers to, but this might link to the self-sustainment of forces deployed outside the country as well. So we are back to the issue of how forces that are deployed around the country and outside the country. country are able to maintain themselves, especially when they're in combat situations. The annual report then continues on to look at the actual performance evaluation of the program. And firstly, I'd like to take a quick overview. If you take all 8 programs that was discussed in the annual report, a total of 143 targets were set over the 8 programs. Of the 143 targets, 39 were not achieved. So 60 were achieved, 24 overachieved, and 39 were not achieved. That is the first aspect I would like to point out. So if you look at success rate of all the targets, 69% was achieved in total. This should be viewed against the fact that the department spent 99.5% of its budget. So if you look at value for money, they spent almost their full budget, but they didn't achieve all the targets they set for themselves. The other concern here is the number of classified targets. Comparing the previous years, this year we've had 20 classified targets, which are not reported on in the annual report, and that makes it difficult to track progress in this regard. The last thing I'd like to mention, looking at the overall picture, is the reduction of set targets. If you look at the previous year, 2012-13, there's a total of 247 targets that were set. Now, if you compare that to 143 set for this year that we're evaluating now, there's a significant reduction in targets, so there's a number of issues that the committee won't be able to track. If we look at it program by program, the first program is Program 1, Administration. In this program, a total of 88 targets were set, of which 26 were underachieved. So again, in this program, there were a 70% success rate, which is already a reduction from the previous financial year, where there was 75% achievement of targets. And again, the department for this program, 100% of the budget was spent. If you look, track quarterly spending for this program, quarterly spending was generally in line with the target. However, again for this program, the number of targets decreased from 106 in the previous financial year to 88 in this financial year. And this should be noted, this reduction in targets was not indicated in the annual performance plan for this program. For other programs, the target set for 2013-14 was in line with the annual performance plan, but for this program one, it was not in line. In the annual report, they provide all 88 targets and whether it was achieved or not achieved. I'm not going to go through all the sub-programs there. I'd like to highlight a few, and the page numbers are indicated there on the side. The first one there is percentage of budget allocation for DoD main equipment. So the target of 30%, but only 10% was achieved. The secondly, percentage of PSAP disciplinary cases that is finalized in 90 days. Only 29% was achieved out of this. So there were 203 disciplinary cases, and only 58 were completed within the 90 days. Percentage compliance with planned staffing of funded posts. The target was overachieved there. I think the committees might inquire how they can overstaff when there's no funded posts available. This is the issue. It has financial implications as well, and the committee might look into that. Then the percentage of reserve budget spent was only 94, but there's been an increase actual deployment of the reserves and the utilization of them, especially for foreign deployment. So I think the committee might inquire as to how this budget is actually spent for the reserves. So for program one, you'll find in the document that there's a number of questions are posed in the gray block, which can be posed with regard to the targets of program one. But these are the ones that I would have liked to highlight. We move to program two, which is on page 16 of the long document. Program 2 had only 60 or not only, program 2 had 16 set targets, of which 6 were underachieved. The targets underachieved in this program of forced employment relate mostly to the conducting of multinational exercises. see that low spending on two sub-programs were recorded throughout the year. That was the Defense Capability Management and the Support to the People program, which only spent 41.7% and 53% respectively by the end of the third quarter. So slow progress in that regard. However, there are a couple of concerns noted in the red block at the bottom. Firstly, the cancellation of four international military exercises, and they're all listed in the document. Interestingly enough, four were cancelled this year, and three of the four were also cancelled in the previous year. So that might have implications for force preparation and those kind of things. So I think the committee might ask them why these exercises were cancelled. It was also one of the reasons they gave for cancelling some of the exercises were the deployment of SA Navy personnel for the purpose of naval control and guidance of shipping training to other Southern countries. It would be interesting to know from the department which countries benefited from our members of the SA Navy being sent there, and why it was not factored in when they were planning the actual military naval exercises. Also, the alternative utilization of reallocated funding. If these military exercises were cancelled, obviously that money was not utilized. How was this redistributed and utilized during the financial year? So those are the questions for Program 2. If we move to Program 3, which is Land with Defense, there's a significant reduction in targets from the previous year. That is a major concern with this program. However, for Land with Defense, the quarterly spending was on track, so there's no problem there, and they spent 100% of their budget. And there was only a small variance during the last quarter, so no major problems financially there. However, in terms of targets, it's difficult to track it because they only set four targets, of which three were classified. So only the one target that they didn't classify was the number of learners on courses, and that was knowledge key. But it's difficult to track the progress from previous years because of the reduction in targets. Program 4, on page 18, Program 4 is related to the air defense program, but there's a bit of a problem here which relates back to the initial strategic priority set. The major issue here was that flying hours were not achieved for this program, for the SA Air Force. If we start look at it financially, there was slow spending throughout the year in this program. So the air defense program spent by the end of the third quarter only 67.8%, while normally programs spent by the end of the third quarter between 70 and 75% of the budget. So slow spending. Then, in addition to the slow spending, there was a large environment to this program in the last quarter. So if you add that large environment that they received plus the slow spending, they spent a total of 35.23% of their final allocation in the last quarter alone. That brings us to the 100% of the budget which they actually spent versus the non-achievement of flying hours. So there's a major question around how the money was managed and why they didn't achieve the flying hours. If we move to Program 5, the story is on page 20. The story is very similar to Program 4, which is air defense. In terms of maritime defense, there was also slow spending throughout the year. There was also a large environment to the program in the last quarter, and this brought about that the department for this program they spent 33.48% of their final allocation in the last quarter. And again, the sea going hours were not achieved. So a question should be asked how this funds were managed. There's also, in this regard, as with the previous three programs, a reduction in targets. There were 14 targets set in the previous financial year, and in this year there were only 4 targets set. So you can see how it's difficult for the committee then to actually track progress in this regard. If we move to page 21, which is the deals with military health support, that's program 6. They set a total of 6 targets, of which 3 were classified and 3 were overachieved. Their financials looked fairly in order throughout the year, but the quarterly spending was in line, And in the last quarter, there was a small variance away from this program, which might have contributed to them slightly overspending slightly on their budget. You'll see at the bottom of the blue block, they spent 100.25% of their budget. It's a small overspending, but the committee might ask as to why this happened and why there was a variance away from the program in the last quarter. Two other issues that came up there, which is also included in the questions I posed. Sorry. The questions I posed on page 22 of this of the long document. Two issues that I would like to highlight is firstly the increased outsourcing to private medical facilities. So noted in the annual report that there's more and more outsourcing of patients where there's no capacity or infrastructure in the military to deal with these patients. And I'm sure that this comes at a major cost to the military to outsource private health care. The second statement that is made there is that the patient footprint is misaligned with the healthcare facility. And this is quite a bold statement, and I think the committee should ask them what they are doing to address this. There's a misalignment between the number of patients that get in and the actual infrastructure and capacity. The committee can ask some questions on that as well. The next program, page 22, deals with the Defense Intelligence Program. They set four targets, of which two are classified and the other two were overachieved on. They also had slow spending throughout the year. By the end of the third quarter, they spent 66% of their budget. Even though they have a small budget, they received a comparatively large environment to the program in the final quarter, meaning that they spent 34.8% of the final allocation in the last quarter alone. That is quite a lot of spend in the last quarter. The issues of concern in this one for this program is that there was the high spending obviously in the last quarter and the decrease in targets for vetting decisions. In 2012-13, they set the target for vetting decisions at 7,000 and this was reduced to 4,000 in 2013-14. So the committee may just ask why they decreased the target for vetting decisions so drastically. The last program is Program 8, and it deals with general support. For this program, a total of 17 targets were set, of which 4 were underachieved. They spent 100% of their budget. It should be noted that quite a big chunk of the budget of this program was taken away from Program 8 in the last quarter. So there was quite a slowdown in spending in the last quarter because so much money was taken out through the environment. Issues of concern in this regard is the environment in the last quarter, the number of learners on courses, which is one of the targets that were not achieved, the low number of crime prevention operations by military police. The reason provided in the annual report for the low number of crime prevention operations is that a lot of the military police officials are deployed outside the country, which impacts on their capacity. But there should be an additional plan to this. I think the committee might just ask the department what is being done to circumvent this. There's also a major reduction in targets. In the previous financial year, there was 38 targets set, and now for this year, there's 17 targets set, so a significant reduction. The second last aspect that I would like to take a quick look at is the organizational structure and human resources of the department. The first issue, it's on page 26, deals with employment and vacancies by critical occupation. Now, on the graph, you'll see the number of red arrows, which points to the highest categories with the highest vacancy rate. Engineering is specifically of concern with 31.8% vacancy rate. Other ones include air crew, naval combat officers, medical professionals, and technical skills employees. I think the committee can make work of looking at each of these individual categories and why, ask reasons why there's no progress in this regard. For example, if we look at, as an example, engineering, the SA Navy, SA Air Force sponsor a number of students to study engineering at tertiary institutions every year. The committee might ask what happens to these students, is there retention of these students once they enter the service and so forth. One page back in the document on page 25, it deals with the macro personnel strength for 3 years in a row, and you will see that it stayed basically the same, even though there was a planned reduction in personnel. So from 2011-12 to 2013-14, they planned to reduce the macro personnel strength with roughly 2,000, and they didn't manage to achieve this. It stayed basically the same over the past few years, and I think the committee might look into that. The other major issue here that committee might look to, which Peter referred to as well, the ratio of spending, is the personnel cost, which represents 53% of the department's total expenditure. This doesn't leave a lot of money for actual exercises and the acquiring of mission equipment. There's also the sick leave, which I just wanted to note, came at a cost of 263 million to the DoD, and the higher sick leave was in the lower skilled salary band. But compared to other departments, sick leave doesn't seem extraordinary. It's in line with our other departments that sick leave as well. Right. The last aspect I would like to quickly take a look at is the financial statement on page 27. The major programs are indicated as the red arrows to the side, which is land with defense, which is the bulk of the allocation for the Department of Defense. The other one is air defense and general support, which gets large allocations. In terms of additional funding, there were 4 cases of additional funding, 60 million to program 4 air defense for higher than budgeted personnel costs. And I think the committee might look into that as well, why there was this amount necessary for higher than budgeted personnel costs. 41 million rand was paid to program 3 land with defense for sale of equipment and spares through the FDA. 6 million was paid to program 4 for the same reason, and 1.6 million is paid to program 8 from the same reason. Perhaps the committee might also wish to engage the department on the workings of the FDA and the spending of the FDA, as Peter also noted earlier. In terms of irregular expenditure, I'd just like to note the key concerns at the bottom there. As I said earlier, the additional funds that was allocated to air defense, the committee might wish to ask why this was necessary to increase funding for personnel remuneration. And then the issue of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which was also addressed yesterday by the Auditor General. The bulk of fruitless and wasteful expenditure relates to the cancellation of an unspecified contract. It's not clear in the annual report what this contract is about, and the committee might wish to ask, because it's quite a substantial amount, what this contract relates to and why this penalty was imposed on the department for the cancellation of this contract. Other cases of fruitless expenditure included 141,000 interest rand for interest charge, 24,000 rand for state funds utilized for private use, 21,000 rand forfeited funds, 13,000 rand storage charges for recovery vehicles, and 10,000 for other cases. So there is some additional fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The last aspect that I included here, I won't dwell on, is the auditor's General's report. The DoD, as you heard yesterday, received a qualified audit, and this relates moreover to intangible capital assets where there wasn't sufficient audit evidence for the intangible assets. But I won't dwell on this. This was covered yesterday by the Auditor General. Thank you. Kelvin will continue with the council and articles analysis.
Now is the two entities, AMSCOR with Arms Corps. Honorable members have received the copy of the presentation as well as the analysis, the longer document which the presentation is based on. I'm not going to focus on each and every aspect of the analysis because actually we have had an opportunity to engage with the doctors. I'm just going to merely highlight on some of the issues that they identified in the annual report of Arms Corps. That would be my scope. The first thing that I want to highlight is that as of 1 May this year, Arms Corps has a new board of directors which has been appointed. And yeah, what I want to alert members to is the appointment of the current chairperson, which may actually aid in addressing some of the problems that we have in the doctor. I'm going to speak to this issue later on in the presentation. With regard to Arms Corps, the operation actually revolves around three or four major functions, which is acquisition, research and development, as well as dockyards and some support functions. With regard to acquisition, if you look at the PowerPoint presentation on top, there is P1-3. Those are the page numbers which you get the information on the analysis document. So this is from page 1 to page 3. With regard to the contract relating to capital equipment acquisition for the year, they amounted to 4.7 billion. This was an 18% decrease as compared to the 5.8 billion of the previous financial year, which was 2012-2013 in this case. Arms Corps was successful in terms of acquisition of several maritime, airborne, landward, and common weapon systems, as well as research and development programs. The challenges which were identified in this case revolve around those seven issues. The first one has to do with the submarines of the South African Navy. For the financial year that ended in for the 2013 financial year, the submarine escape training simulator did not comply with the revised OHS regulation, and that was expected to be completed by July 2014, instead of the period it was initially intended to be completed. And they also had issues with the Argus helicopter upgrade, but the only challenge that they had there was administrative activity that remained through all others. The third one had to do with the leak in fighter trainer aircraft, which I believe is the Hawk. And they said that the delivery of the maintenance capability will be completed in 2014, meaning in this current financial year. The other problem they had there was, which I can mention, was the defense industrial participation. This emanates from the strategic defense packages which were conducted way back. This defense industrial participation has to do with the obligation of a foreign a supplier of armament, which actually received contract from South Africa. They have certain obligations in terms of training personnel, retention of skills, etc., etc. The problem that has been experienced here has to do with MBDA, which is a European-based missile developer and arms manufacturer. This stems from the acquisition of the Exocet missiles for the naval frigates, and this obligation remains outstanding from that period. By the end of the financial year under review 2013-14, MBDA has not proposed any acceptable business plan to discharge the obligation. So, based on acquisition, these are are some of the questions which honorable members may wish to pose to the department. The first one has to do with the submarine escape training facility which hasn't been completed. So, because there was a delay, members may wish to ask the reason for such a delay. The second has to do with the lead in fighter trainer aircraft, the Hawks. So members may wish to inquire how far is the process dealing with delivery of the maintenance capability. And those other additional questions. With regard to defense industrial participation, which is on pages 3 to 4, there were no new defense industrial participation agreements for the financial year under review 2013-14. One agreement remains outstanding, is the one that I already alluded to, the MBDA. And the outstanding obligation remains at 933 million, similar to the previous financial year. What members may note here is that this agreement has been an ongoing concern for several years now. So in terms of remarks and questions, the committee may choose to inquire a comprehensive explanation of this agreement and the reason for the fact that the obligations are not met or haven't been met in several years now, and the steps taken to try and remedy the situation. Now I'll move on to arms code dossier, which is on pages 5 to 6. For the financial year under review, arms code faced several challenges ranging from lack of funding, insufficient capacity and capability. What is clear is that the dockyard needs a major transformation program, and this was clearly identified by the board, hence the commissioning of the study that was conducted. And the challenges which are faced by dockyard for this year under review 2013-14 led to the achievement of 75.5% against the set target of 90% in terms of dockyard and the obligation. The project that experienced challenges for this financial year under review were those two. The first was the frigate, and the second was the submarine. In terms of the frigate, SAS mainly was docked on 27 June 2013 for DED, that's docking and inertial defect. The problem experienced for the vessel included funding to procure spares and material. With regard to submarines, SAS Queen Mujaji 1 underwent maintenance from 7 October 2013. The availability of spares was a challenge for the submarine due to lack of funding and that impacted on the third provision date of June 2014. It is also important to note that the dockyard has limited trained submarine personnel, which also contributes to the delay. With regard to the situation in the dockyard, members may wish to pose some of those questions, like what is being done to address problems related to the funding model and ensure an effective dockyard. That you also heard from my colleague here, Peter. In terms of the study that was conducted, what are the main findings of the study? What are the plans to address the problem? And timeline for addressing the challenges which were observed? I believe that the study has been completed, and they just need to report on some of those issues. and what measures are put in place to address the human resources challenges in the short term? Like I already said, there's a problem with regard to trained submarine personnel that can actually work on the submarine. Okay. With regard to the delay in the completion of frigates and submarines, how do those impact on the capacity of the Navy to discharge its obligation, for instance, with regard to Operation Copper, naval exercises, and other operations, as you may have heard, that some of the exercises were cancelled due to several reasons. And with this, we need to also understand that the government is currently working on Operation Akisa, which will be announced recently. And that actually entails the opening of the country's ocean for the economy in order to boost the economy, working towards the 2030 National Development Plan. And this actually, if these challenges exist, this will impact on that, because the Navy will commence playing a major role in trying to protect the country's ocean. And on top of that, the new operation to the West Coast, more or less similar to Copper, is going to commence. And when that happens, if we are still experiencing these delays, we are not going to be able to have the ships patrolling there. And some of these delays actually contributed to the Navy not achieving, or the maritime program not achieving the set hours, as you heard from my colleague, that the set hours of 2000 were actually not achieved in this past financial year. Okay, now I'm moving on to HR management and transformation. This you find on pages 6 to 8. I included a table outlining numbers in terms of staff, etc. But I'm not going to go into this in detail. I'm just going to highlight some of those issues that are on the slide. Currently, the staff complement is about 1,425. This is an increase of about 84 personnel from 2012-18, which was at 1,341. In terms of gender, Armed Corps is male dominated. You can see that 66.67% are male. Although this decreased from the previous financial year, where the male were about 58.35%, is still a large portion. In terms of racial composition, 89.92% of the staff complement are African. 82.35 white, colored 24.35, and Indian 3.8%. The most significant shift in terms of staff complement are those 4.3% increase in African employees, while there was a 3.82 decrease in white employees. In terms of addressing the skills shortages which are experienced by Armed Corps, including the doctors, etc., the group has sent engineers abroad for training in various fields. And 48 artisans were also selected for training, 36 Navy students for practical training. These are the students that are completing various engineering degrees at Stellenbosch, CPUT, and UCT. And 23 candidates for talent and development. The point of clarity with regard to HR management and transformation are those that are contained in the slide. Members may wish to find out from Armed Corps the staff complement KH group, because this is not contained here. And this is actually very important, because during the committee's oversight visit to the naval dockyard in Simonstown, it emerged that some of the employees are actually very aged. And when these employees now go on retirement, they will need to be replaced by other employees that are qualified to perform the same punishment that was before me. If that doesn't happen, it means the dockyards and other arms corps businesses are still going to experience similar challenges. And also, members may wish to inquire about the amount allocated for international training for personnel, the engineers that were sent on different programs. The number of those people making use of the opportunity and the number of those who successfully completed the program, because this is important. It's not enough to say that 23 people or 30 people were sent on training programs. We need to find out how many of those were successful on those programs, because if we are sending these numbers and we're not getting the true pool, it means we remain unclear on whether this is actually working or not working. And if that is not working, perhaps alternatives are needed. Okay. Another is the duration of the practical training for the Navy students and how they can actually contribute in addressing some of the challenges that the dockyard is experiencing. And a detailed explanation is needed with regard to the talent development program. Information here should include payment for all studies, contract obligation after the completion of their studies, those that actually receive offers for the development program. What happens in most instances is that you find that there are candidates that are selected to partake in this program, maybe for 3 or 4 years, but you find that on their 4th year, just before they complete, they get offered or they actually get pulled out by the team companies, which means that Arms Corps and the DOD in general will actually spend the money training these people, but when they complete, they actually leave the organization, meaning that the organization is not really benefiting. Okay. And also, the reason for decreasing the number of candidates to 23 instead of 34, as indicated in the annual report of 2012-2013. Okay. Now I'm moving on to performance overview. That is found from page 8 to 12. In terms of the key performance indicators, there were about 42 for 2013-2014, and of those, 29 were achieved, and 13 or 31% of the KPIs were not achieved, as shown in table 3 of the actual document. Yeah, I didn't put all the KPIs. I only focused on those that were not achieved, as you can see by red on the last column of the slide. Those which were not achieved include for objective 7 that deals with the dockyard. The third target was 90%, as I already alluded to this. But only about 75% was achieved. The second one had to do with the review of AD logistic travel. I think this was to do with the policy. The goal was to have this achieved by the 1st August 2018, but that was only achieved a month later, this is September 2018, as it was indicated as not achieved. And those other ones. With regard to performance overview, the underachievement and challenges, those are some of the questions which members may wish to address. The first one has to do with the project setup supporting for the dockyard to ensure adherence to project contractual milestones as per the project plan, which was of course not achieved. Members may wish to ask what caused the delay and what measures are in place to prevent the reoccurrence of such delays. The second has to do with the review of AB logistics. This was not achieved. And this was also not achieved for 2012-2013. Members may wish to ask the reasons for not achieving the target, as of 31st August 2018 has indicated.
one is the 3-year SLA with the Secretary for Defense, which was not achieved, and the reason indicated was that the final agreement could not be reached on the proposed funding model. What is the solution to this challenge, and what is the timeline for the completion of the agreement? The next has to do with employee satisfaction, which was not achieved. In the short track, this was a regress from 12 stating, where the achievement was about 66.4%. What are the reasons for the underachievement? The next one has to do with the BEE, triple BEE policy, transformation and preference for local industry, which was not achieved. The same goal was not achieved in 2018. How far is the process with regard to the policy? With regard to financial statement and the report of the Auditor General, the net value for the group increased from 1.8 billion in 2013 to 1.9 billion in 2014. The group's total comprehensive income, however, decreased significantly from 1.19 billion in 2013 to 103 million in 2014. However, members need to know that for the previous financial year, 2013, there was about 1.8 billion for property revaluation that contributed to that profit of 1.8 billion. Okay, profit for the year under review was influenced by the inclusion of the Arms Commercial Benefit Fund. If that is excluded, the profit would have been 76.9 million. There was an increase in expenditure on employee salaries, wages, and other benefits to about 8.36 million. Other financial matters included fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 393,000, decrease in AmStore revenue from 9.3 million to 6.3 million in 2013-14, and irregular expenditure of 63.5 million, which is related to the 25% black equity selection criteria as a requirement set out by AMSCO. And I believe some of these issues were addressed yesterday by the office of the AG. With regard to the financial statement, some of the questions which members may wish to raise are those: the filling of vacancies, which has been an ongoing concern, and the reason for the decrease in revenue by the AMSCO dockyard, and the reason for late deliveries resulting in penalties of 393,000, which contributed significantly to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Okay, and another one is the issue regarding the 25% of black equity, while AMSCO is waiting for the exemption from National Treasury, which has been applied. Okay, with regard to the report of the AG, you have heard yesterday that AMSCO received unqualified for this opinion. However, several concerns were noted. As to expenditure management, it was found that there was a lack of effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure. And with regard to annual financial statements, when they were submitted, they were not prepared in accordance with the PFMA and the Companies Act. However, that was actually rectified. And with regard to leadership, inadequate oversight with regard to compliance and other related internal control was found. Policies and procedures were not in all respects aligned with applicable legislation. The questions which may be raised from these are those: measures in place to prevent irregular expenditure,
and adequate oversight that is needed to ensure compliance with applicable legislation. That was AMSCO presentation.
Thank you, Calvin. We will continue with another presentation.
Yes, Professor. Yes, correct.
Okay.
With regard to the Cartel Control Board, I'm not going to take too much of the time because the analysis is short, so is the presentation. Those are the issues I'm going to quickly focus on. With regard to strategic objective performance and budget, this is found on pages 3 to 4 of the analysis. For program 1, which is administration through good corporate governance, those were the key performance indicators, and one of those was not achieved. That is the number of audit risk committee meetings. The target was set to 4, and only 3 were achieved. The reason provided for not achieving the target was that the engagement with the office of the AG SA were not recorded as such. In terms of the budget allocated for the program was 2.5 million. And what was spent on that target was 2.345 million, leading to an underspending of about 181,000, which of course is recorded as a saving. The question that may be asked is what were the reasons for not recording the engagement with AGSA as number of audit and his committee meetings, leading to the underachievement of the target. With regard to program 2, which is on pages 4 to 5, that was the key performance indicator that was not met. The planned target for the year for program 2, preservation, interpretation, and showcasing of the castle. The planned target for the year was 797,000 for repairs and maintenance of the castle. Of that 797,000, only 117,000 was spent, meaning that the target was missed by 679,482 rand. That led to more or less an underspending of about 785,000. The reason provided for that, of course, was that the assistance of the DOD and DPW people on site was of major assistance, and that castle was to undergo a major overhaul. The questions which may be raised, of course, are those: when will the overhaul of the castle be completed? And what was the reason for the imprecise budgeting, as this was one of the reasons that was mentioned for missing the target? What was the reason for imprecise budgeting leading to missing target by 679,000? And was all planned refurbishing for the year completed, or is there any outstanding work that we need refurbishing? Because if there is still outstanding work, that money that was freed or that was not spent could have been spent for some of these ways that needs to be done. With regard to program 3, maximizing the tourism potential of the castle, that was the target that was not met. Total expected number of visitors to the castle. The target that was planned for 2013-14 was 145,000. Only 141,084 was achieved. The reason provided for the underachievement of the target was that the castle closed on 15 December, and also the activities on Grand Parade around the passing of the former president, Nelson Mandela. The budget for the program was 67,000. Only 48,000 was spent, leading to an underspending of 17,000. some of the questions which may be asked by honorable members include those: for how long was the castle closed? And if the castle was not closed for that period, would they have met the target of 145,000? And how much estimated revenue was lost during that that period when the castle was closed? With regard to Program 4, which is increased public profile and positive perception across all sectors of the community, which is, of course, on pages 6 to 7 of the analysis, that indicator was not achieved for printing, publication, and marketing of the Castle of Good Hope. In terms of the projected income from events, film, and fashion shows, the planned target of 275,000 was overachieved, as you can see, that the castle made about 585,200 rand. And the previous year, they made 426,950. I'll come back to this point. In terms of the budget, 104,000 was budgeted for the program. However, the spending was 211,000, which was which represented an over spending of 107,000. The reason for the overspending was the funding for corporate events. With regard to questions for the program, members may wish to ask for the reason for setting the target so low for the projected revenues from events, films and fashion shoots during 2013-2014. As you can see from that slide, that the previous year of 2012-13, the amount that was received from that was 426,950. However, the target for the following year was set to just over half of what was received. So, what were the reasons for actually setting the target so low, given the fact that over the past, they have seen an upward trend in terms of revenues from debt? Okay, and what was the reason for low budgeting on increased public profile and positive perception? In short, the budgeting for the whole program, because that led to an overspending of 107,000 that was spent on those corporate events. Given that the castle did not achieve its target for the number of visitors, could the underspending on marketing be linked to that? Because they underspent on marketing and they failed to achieve their 145,000 target by about 4,000. Could that be linked to underspending with regard to that? Okay. In terms of financial performance, which is of course found on pages 7 onwards, the revenue for 2013-14 was 3.5, as indicated there. This actually indicates that there was an increase of about 2.5% as compared to the revenue from the previous year. However, in terms of expenditure, the expenditure increased by more than 36%. The expenditure for 2013-14 was about 3.4 million as compared to 2.5 million of the previous financial year. With regard to the surplus, you will see that for 2012-13, the surplus was about 883,000. And for the financial year under review, that was 41,000. That was the surplus. You need, when looking at this, you need to also understand that there was an underspending on one of the programs of about 700,000, meaning that if they actually spent the funds, they would have operated in the red. So that led to the accumulated surplus over the years to about 40 notable variation of the 2013-2014 year. In terms of net ticket sales, there was an increase of about 5% or 5.3% from 1.8 million to 1.9 million in 2013-2014. And that is the possible reason for the increase. However, in terms of staff costs, there were major variations when compared to the previous financial year. Members need to take cognizance that the CEO was appointed in this year under review. And in the past, the council lacked chief executive officer. And they used someone on a pro rata basis, whereby they were paid about 89,000. But now, because they made the permanent appointment, the salary for the CEO is 695,000. That means there was an increase of about 608% compared to the 89,000 that was paid for pro-rata. In terms of salary, of course, excluding that of the CEO, there was an increase from 731 the previous year to 941. That represents about 28% increase, and the reason for that, of course, is unknown. But in terms of bonuses, there was a major increase. The previous financial year, the bonuses that were paid were about 44,000. And for this year under review, 112,000, which represent an increase of about 60.7%. And members need to take cognizance that about 111,000 of the bonuses were paid to the CEO. So I don't know how many other people got bonuses, since 112 was the total for bonuses. And there was an increase in the pay of 28,000. But the previous year, there was no payment that was made for that. In terms of operating expenses, advertising increased from 71,000 to 141,000, which illustrates about 98% increase. And communication increased, military tattoo expenditure also increased from 44,000 the previous financial year to 145,000 in 2013-14. And there was expenditure on CCB special dates, which was incurred for the past financial year. That led to that overspending of 107,000 that I referred to earlier. Of that total amount, what contributed to that total amount is the 144,000 that was spent on CCD special days, which did not happen in the past. So with regard to financial performance, these are some of the questions which members may wish to ask. According to the annual report, 111,000 was spent on performance rewards for top management, the CEO. And a total of 112,000 was spent on performance bonuses in total. So the question here is that, is it the only CEO that received the performance bonus, and what happened to the other employees? And why is that in the previous financial year, about 44,000 was paid in terms of performance bonuses? The second one has to do with the 28,000 that was spent on increase in leave pay. What was this paid for? And why was no money spent the previous financial year? With regard to 144,000 that was spent on special days of the CCD, is it the first time these days were held? If not, why is not indicated in previous financial reports? And what does these special days entail? The next is, what led to the increase in expenses for the military tattoo to 145,000 as compared to 44,000 of the previous financial year of 2013? And what are the reasons for the 98% increase in advertising versus the 5.3% increase in ticket sales? The two do not talk to each other. With regard to the findings going to dwell too much on this, but I would like to highlight that the council, just like the past, they received an unqualified positive opinion. But the problem that we identified included those. The first was around the PDO, predetermined objective. In program two, 75% of the targets were found to be not aligned with the SMART principles as the National Treasury regulations and other legislation, meaning that those targets were found to be not specific and well-defined. And in program three, 50% of those targets were not specific and well-defined. With regard to compliance with legislation, there were findings on internal audit, procurement and contract management, expenditure management, and strategic plan. The details for those are found on page 9. With regard to internal audit, it was found that the accounting officer did not ensure the establishment of an internal audit function for the full financial period, as required by the PFMA and Treasury regulations. In terms of internal control, there were findings on leadership, financial and performance management, as well as governance. With regard to leadership, it was found that the accounting officer did not implement internal policies and procedures for performance information management and reporting to ensure compliance with the applicable laws, regulations, and guidelines. In terms of the findings of the AG, those are some of the questions which members may wish to ask the CCB. What measures are in place to ensure that to ensure that the targets for the programs two and three are specific and well defined, and which targets does the program refer to, because that is not specified in the annual report. In terms of the internal audit, is an internal audit function for the full financial period currently in place? This needs to be asked, because if that is not in place, the report for the current financial year will say the same findings. In terms of procurement and contract management, what are the reasons for procuring goods and services with a transaction value below 500,000 without the required price quotation? So the questions continue. Members can look at the person in the analysis. I'm not going to go through all of them. With regard to the CEO's overview, the CEO provided an overview re-emphasizing that the castle is funded by ticket sales, venue rental, swimming levies, etc. And that has led to a surplus of about 13.9 million in the past period, which of course now has risen to about 14 million, as I already stated. Right. However, that the CEO goes on to make that statement as quoted there, that the bottom line is that the CCB has managed its finances exceptionally well and only realized an underspending of about 41,000 as compared to 883,000 of the previous financial year. Of course, that, according to the CEO, is viewed as a positive improvement, which, in terms of accounting, I'll say yes, it makes sense. But however, in this case, we need to take cognizance that there was an underspending on one of the programs, a major underspending, which means if that was done, we could have seen the castle operating on a negative. The remarks with regard to the overview that was made by the CEO, Ado, in terms of the financial review, the surplus of 41,000 was recorded for the year under review, 1814, as compared to 813 and 813 for 2012, 13, and 11, 12, 16. Taking into consideration that the revenue for 12, 13, and 13, 14 was 3.4 million and 3.5 million respectively, while the expenditure for the same period was 2.5 million and 3.4 million. The council recorded increases of 3.5% in terms of revenue and 36% in terms of expenditure, which means the council spent more than they were actually making in 2013-2014. However, the surplus has decreased by 95% due to the appointment of the CEO and the bonuses that were actually paid from 883,000 to 41,000 in the current financial year. Given the increase in staff costs from 864,000 in 2012-18 to about 1.7 million instead of the projected, I think, 1.5 million. And the fact that 690 was not spent for maintenance, the entity would have made a loss for 2013-14. If the trend continues and the overall surplus of about 14 million doesn't increase, it means the council is going to run out of funds unless if they come up with major programs of increasing revenue. And in terms of economic viability, it should be noted that the increase in staff costs will decrease the accumulated surplus, as I already stated, unless, of course, we have that significant increase in revenue. Additional measures which may be noted is the increase in back rates and clients and the head package restaurant, as you heard from my colleague Peter when he was presenting. Remarks and present regarding these. The timelines are required detailing the city or relevant authorities' response to the challenge of vagrancy and petty crime. It should be noted that if this is not addressed, the castle will very soon start to be seen as a crime hotspot, meaning that the people will probably not go and visit the castle as regularly as they would have if the castle was seen as. And with regard to the restaurant, what is the current status of the restaurant and how much revenue the restaurant has generated in the financial year under review, and how has that revenue been utilized? Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are done with all the presentation. Honorable members, I take it that the presentation is meant to strengthen our oversight roles as we lead the department. The researchers and the content advisors are not the department. What we should maybe do, we should ask if there are any points of clarity. We should just ask the researchers and the content advisors. Over to you, honorable members. Honorable Gamede.
The point of clarity first is the issue of the salary of the castle control of the CEO. Whether that 89,000 was for a year or for a month, reconciling it with that 600,000.
Directing from the chair, should we answer as the questions come along, or should we wait for all the questions?
No, give me a question.
Answer.
Okay. The 89,000 was not for the full year. It was sort of a temporary position, so they were paid pro rata in the past. They did not have a permanent appointment made. And that was
just for the month or semantics.
I'll definitely have to find that out.
Okay.
Okay, any other point of clarity?
On that issue, Chair, okay, before I, because we need to compare apples with apples. If maybe it was 7 months, we shouldn't compare that with 6, 5, 6, 12 months and so on. Must be apples with apples, so that we know.
Honorable sir?
Chair, maybe just a comment. Formerly, when we interacted with the castle, we had Captain Walker as the manager for the castle reporting to us. And that is a very junior position compared to a CEO position. And therefore, the also salary disparity is very, very big. And the question we raised at the committee and the concern is, if people are appointed for a small operation like the castle, do we need such highly qualified people? Or do we work on a part-time basis? That's what the CFO position, the heritage office, and the other positions that open up afterwards. We ask them that we would like to know what the cost involved, because we can't compare that to a normal department where somebody's running a huge department and this huge responsibility. The castle is a very small operation. So I think that was the response to it, that yes, we needed a CFO because the financial issues are not run smoothly and they need to get a policy in place. We were informed that it's a part-time position, it's not full-time, but the CEO position is a full-time position. We have, of course, there's concerns about the viability, the long-term sustainability of the castle. According to the response I received to questions which I've put to the castle, is that they got a commercialization program that they're working on, and they have outsources to a company that will write the plan to make it open for all types of different tourism and to try and draw in more people so that they can create more revenue. But if that is not going to work, then certainly we're looking at less than 10 years. All the monies will be depleted and there won't be any surplus. So in this instance, the castle is not run on a zero budget where we have funding from the National Treasury. There is no transfer except 8 people that are working for the castle from the Defense Department, and even some of those people have now left. And the castle has employed now other employees at their expense, which is additional cost which has not been budgeted for. So we can only see that those monies of 13.9 or 14.1 million, that will be reduced tremendously within the next few years, and unless other methods kick in to generate funding. So yes, there is a great concern from our side. Honorable Chair, my question would be, with all these questions that we have to interrogate the department, would we be allowed to raise all these questions and find clarity on it?
Who are you asking?
No. There is no question. Given time, given time, we must ask all the questions. The only problem is that that we may not complete the question time, the question process, is that we might run out of time. But if we run out of time, we can still request that the department should send us written answers. I think you need to start promoting that mindset. I think that's the way to go, Honorable Member.
After our last meeting, Honorable Chair, and I didn't get answered, I sent 65 questions immediately after. So, we're not getting
answers. It's fine, it's not your fault. We'll make a follow-up on the question. We need to make a follow-up on the questions. Yeah? That's another problem. Maybe our follow-up mechanism should also be improved so that we get them. When you see, normally we give them timelines, and then we need to be able to make a follow-up on the timelines. And that's they come, we process them and bring them over to you. There is no more any question.
Yes, it's the one on Arms Corps. Arms Corps, a major concern last year, Chair, when we engage with them on the quarterly report and also the budget for the new year, Arms Corps was complaining about the huge deficit. They need a lot of money because they can't function. There's not enough money to pay for all the commitments they've made. I've sent questions to them regarding the regional strategy and the refinancing of the deficit, how they intend to overcome it. It seems that they solved all their problems. There's no deficit anymore. They are very prudent people and they know how to manage their income and revenue, and they will apply, you know, savings and then cross-fund it. So the deficit issue is no more an issue. So they've done wonderful within the few months.
Okay.
So, our department, we have to interrogate.
No, it's fine. Belém, I just want you to clarify on your slide, page 9, slide me by Belém. Just clarify, what is overachieved here? Percentage compliance with credit starting was funded post. Then this one. Then on page 13, you talk of a slow spending. How do we categorize slow spending in terms of our oversight goals? And also the on page 14, overspending by some. How do we categorize that in terms of oversight?
In terms of the first one on page 9, that is, I highlighted it because it is not clear. The percentage compliance with plan, staffing, and funded post, the way I understood it is that they would have wanted to achieve 90% of the funded post staff, but now they achieve 113% of the funded post. That means, the way I understand is that they employed more people than those funded posts. So that is the question.
So why do you call it overachieved?
That is exactly what they call it overachieved.
Because you need to have a better term for that.
Yeah.
You need to have a better term.
Yeah. No, it's not, luckily not my word. They call it overachieved.
Oh, it's the department that says overachieved.
Not me. They call it overachieved. But I think it's worth the issue to raise concern. They should explain this at least, how they can put more people there than their funded folks. That's the issue.
Okay, then the next to us.
The next one, it's about the underspinning.
We're looking at National Treasury Section 32 reports. That is the quarterly report that they provide us with. And for instance, for a financial year, we say we have four quarters, and then we say by each quarter we should spend 25%. The first one, say 25% of the budget, the next one 50%, 75%, whatever. And there's a specific target, I'm seeing on a correction, but a specific target that National Treasury says that should be spent within a specific quarter. And now if that's below that, then we say, but they must slow spending in that specific quarter, but against the target set by National Treasury.
But but it does not constitute financial misconduct, I guess. Because that is
no.
Honorable.
Also, Chair, as you are saying, it's different with defense. Because as soon as you start the quota, you can't be spending on that quota. You are procuring and doing that. That is why you find most of the spending in the third quota. There is more spending. I know with other departments it's quite easy. You can do it with health and so on, everything, because you need things from the third quota.
That is the thing, because that's why I was saying that today you need to categorize it for oversight. Because how do we go to do? We say if you spend slow, is it a financial misconduct or not? And it is not, is it?
So, I just want to add that the reason I highlighted the slow spending in those cases where it's not misconduct. You find it that a little bit the reason I highlighted those were not because it's financial misconduct. It's just to know that they spend slow during the year, a little bit slow, it wasn't major slow spending. And then by the end of the third quarter, for example, they spend 67%, where they should have been at 75%. But then the issue was that a large amount came into that program for that last quarter. So all of a sudden, they didn't spend enough, and now there's extra money, which they didn't all spend in the last quarter. So I think maybe it's for procurement purposes, like you correctly point out.
Okay.
But I think it's worth the question, just to ask them, how was that managed? What did you procure, perhaps? It's just for clarity.
Okay. So I just want us to be clear, we're not going to kill the department for something that they have not done. And then what about the SAMS one? The overspending, what do you categorize it?
The overspending just refers to they had a certain budget, and that is they spent slightly more money than they actually had by the end of the year. So
what was it within legislation? Because that is what we...
8% variance.
Yeah.
Yes, it's 8% variance. But it might have to do with management. You should manage your money so that you only spend 100%. But it's not a major issue, and money was taken away from that program. But perhaps the question is there. If you say, why did you take money away from that program in the last quarter if they were on their way to achieve the budget? It would be the same, yeah, for anybody to take money away just for the next payday. They won't make it, yeah.
No, it's fine. I think we are not afraid to oversight. Always when you do your presentation, you must be aware of that fact, categorizing the areas of our oversight. But what I'm going to ask you to do from your presentation to make things very simple for the committee. Realize that issues that you raise, some will need managerial intervention, some will need a policy intervention, and some will need, you said one, Calvin, somewhere when you were presenting, you said this is about policy. Is it?
Yes.
So, which means some issues need policy intervention. And then other issues will also need legislative intervention. Can you categorize all of them and then just give us a dashboard so that we may assist on matters, managerial problems with some being managers. We don't have to be managers. We can only assist, and then the department must also account on policy and legislative matters. So we must be very clear. Thank you very much. I couldn't only remember to have that. If we can get that. Yeah.
Are we saying that, Honourable Chair, that we take the all the questions and we categorize?
Yeah.
And we give it to them and we can add to the list?
No, if you want to assist, I wanted them to do it. But if you want to assist them, it's fine. I wanted them to do it because
no.
They are aware.
If the department gets a lovely list, then they can also...
The respective contact advisor can do that for us.
This is meant to empower or strengthen our oversight role as a commission. We must not run around not understanding what type of intervention we want to make. You see? Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.